coming up on episode 209 of Wheel Bearings. We've got the new Hyundai Veloster N with its 8-speed DCT, the Mazda 6 on its way out the door, and the Toyota GR86 on its way in. Robbie gets a look at the Cadillac Lyriq in person, has a brief spell with the Chevy Bolt EV before it goes back to get its battery replaced. And we've got the new Genesis GV60 EV, the Nissan Z, and a little ride in Ford's Blue Cruise, all coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 209 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samad of Guidehouse Insights.
I'm Nicole Wakelin of Sports Car Market Magazine.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Engadget.
Excellent. So, Nicole, why don't you go first? What did you drive this week?
So what I have in my driveway is the 2021 Mazda 6, which is a really fun little sedan. So here's a funny thing. My husband has this weird anti-Mazda thing. I don't know why. He's like, yeah, I know, right?
That's why?
Like,
what? What's wrong with your husband?
Well, I know. That's not like the first time. Like, so we sat down in a Mazda, I don't know, a couple years ago. He's like, oh, I hate Mazdas. I'm like, all you did was sit your butt in it. What is your problem? You've sat your butt down in the seat and you don't like it. What's wrong? He just had this like impression that they were these like boring cars and they're not really fun. Right. I know. If you could see the look on Roberto's face. And I'm like, when did you last get in a Mazda? He's like, I don't know. I was like in college or something. I'm like, so is it some ancient beat-up version of a Mazda that one of your friends was driving? He's like, maybe. I'm like, perhaps your image needs to be updated. So I still am on this quest to get him to like Mazdas. This one might have done it. He liked this one. He did sort of like a, okay, this isn't so bad. And I can't understand it. He appreciated it, yes. What he liked is, 6'3" husband, is that he had plenty of room, even though this isn't a huge sedan, and it looks very small from the outside, but inside there's actually a good bit more room. Like, he sat down in the front seat, my daughter sat behind him, and her knees weren't up to her chin. So that was a plus. I like it because it looks beautiful. It is $37,290 as equipped the way I got it, which is the Signature trim, which has a 2.5 turbo with 227 horsepower, 310 pound-feet of torque, front-wheel drive. So it's a good price, and it looks good, and it is fun to drive. Of course, he doesn't get to drive it. He just gets to ride in it because it's a press car, and he has no permission. But I enjoy driving it. And today, as we are recording this, I am in New Hampshire, and we had Hurricane, I guess he's really only Tropical Storm, Tropical Storm Ari has arrived. So we have torrential rains and horrible wind. And I had to drive it about 45 minutes away. It is terrible weather to drive a car. Like, you can't see where you're going. There is like a sheen of water on the road. And again, this is front wheel drive. This isn't even like I have an all wheel drive version of this. It's like, okay, bring on the crummy weather. No, front wheel drive handled like a dream. Even with the wind, like, I could feel the wind buffeting the car because we had some pretty decent gusts. Still, it stays really controlled. So I was genuinely impressed. There's not very many times where you get to test out a car in that kind of weather that the timing works out. I'm like, okay, we're going to take my car up there. We're going to take the press car. We're going to see how it does. And it did amazingly well. And it is incredibly comfortable and still was very quiet. Like I said, we had gusts that were up to 40 miles an hour, which is a pretty decent gust of wind to come smacking at you as you're driving down the highway at 65 miles an hour. And it was still quiet and with the rain. So it kept that sort of passenger calm. It was calm and comfortable and relaxed despite the chaos outside with leaves and branches flying off the trees all around us. But Mazda, your car's still in one piece, so we're all good. Nothing hit the car. So I was a fan. I liked it. And husband's, you know, he's warming up to Mazda. So I feel like that's a plus, gradually moving him towards thinking that Mazdas are fun. What I need to do is get my hands on a Miata and get him permission to drive it and go, now tell me the Mazda's not exciting.
Yeah. Or even the Mazda 3. Just the three wagon with the all-wheel drive.
He got one at a rental car, like, because he travels and he has to occasionally rent a car, but he got like the rental car special. I'm like, that is not the way to determine if you like a car. You've gotten the the lowest trim that some other guy has thrashed. And so one of these days I will get him to really, truly like Mazdas, but I loved it. And I like Mazdas to begin with. I think they're fun. You know, they are driver's cars and they feel like driver's cars and they look good. I always think that they look super sexy. This one was machine gray metallic. So it's just like this really dark gray with this great metallic tint to it. But the reds that Mazda, nobody makes a red car like Mazda. Good Lord. Whatever that red is
Soul Crystal Red.
Yes.
Soul Crystal Red is absolutely the best color.
Is it not the most beautiful? Like there's somebody in my neighborhood. Soul Crystal. Who has one? And I'm like, oh, there it is. And I just drive, I just like sort of, it's like a little bright spot as I drive out of the neighborhood when they're parked in their driveway.
Because if someone has to sell their soul, that's how they make the red that good.
That's okay.
It's like a deal with the devil at the Mazda facility.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
I can deal with that. If someone has to sell their soul to get a car that pretty, okay, we're all going to see the devil later on. That's fine.
All right.
Big deal. Whatever. Devil went down to Mazda. We can write a whole new song. There's our podcast title. Devil went down to Mazda.
There is one unfortunate aspect of the Mazda 6. As good as it is.
Yes.
Oh, 2021 will be the last model year. It's going away.
I know, which is
there is
sad.
Supposed to be a new one coming, probably maybe next year for the 2023 model. Mm-hmm. But this year, you know, when the Mazda dealers run out of 21 models, that's it for this generation. There's no more coming.
There is one other unfortunate thing, and this is just a Mazda thing, and this is the one I can't get behind. Exactly what I'm going to complain about, Sam. What am I going to complain about?
The infotainment system.
Yes, does not have a...
The infotainment, yeah.
It does not have a touchscreen. And I'll tell you what, you know, here's again, driving during the hurricane force winds, it was warning me, and I'm sure there's a setting somewhere where I can turn this off, but not while I'm driving at 65 miles an hour with the storm, you know, around me. It gives you the storm warnings for every county. We apparently have 100,000 counties in southern New Hampshire. I now realize it's like there's a hurricane force wind warning in Cheshire County, hurricane force wind warning in Coos County. Every single one is its own warning. And every single time it shows up, there's like a close or a details that you can get about each warning. You have to spin little knob and hit close, spin little knob and hit close, spin little knob and hit close. I can't, and then I did that for all of the tropical storm warnings, and apparently we got enough rain, there was flood warnings, so that I had to turn it and do the little thing for the flood warnings for every county. I was like, okay, I hate this infotainment system, so I'm still going to hate on
were,
that.
Were those coming through the traffic alerts?
I'm thinking it was probably something about maybe that it was SiriusXM. It could have been the traffic alerts. Like I said, I couldn't. Okay. This literally pops up in the middle of driving. I'm like, I can't figure out what's making this pop up. I just know that if I want to see anything on that screen, I have to spin and click roughly 5,000 times. I could just tap, 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 which would have been really easy. Tap, 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 tap. No, spin, click, spin, click, spin, click to get rid of them all. So I know you don't care about touchscreens, I can sympathize with that.
No, I mean, that is a very valid complaint. You know, and while I'm not a fan of touchscreens, that is definitely a scenario where it would be a lot easier.
Yes.
I mean, granted, hopefully it's not a scenario that happens very often for most people.
But you know what I bet it would happen?
You know, bad weather happens, you know,
well, that's the
whether
thing,
it's hurricanes or blizzards or whatever.
That's what I say, because like hurricanes, okay, those don't happen every day. But during the winter, a huge swath of this country gets snow that's worth a weather warning every single day. So depending on where you are, you're going to get all these weather warnings and have to do that to get rid of it. I'm like, oh.
Or thunderstorms in the summer.
See, so that was, and maybe I've never had a Mazda when there was really, truly bad weather. I'm like, oh, this is intolerable. But yeah.
I had a BMW or an, I don't remember. I had a German car in Germany. And every so often, like they have a traffic alert that'll come up and tell you, oh, there's traffic on this road that you're coming up to or whatever. But it kept popping up and it would be in German because I'm driving a German car in a German country. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening.
You think it was a traffic alert. You were about to be arrested for speeding. Who knows?
Maybe.
You couldn't read it. It was in German.
It could have been BMW being like, you got to bring our car back. You've had it for too long. Sorry, BMW.
Sorry, put it in English. I have no idea what you're yelling at me about.
I don't know what's going on.
So that was the car in my driveway. But I also drove another car the same week that I drove the Fantabulous Jeep Grand Cherokee or Grand Wagoneer. I had a Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer. I had the time to drive the 2022 Toyota GR86. You guys, this car is fun. It is so fun. What were you going to say?
I own a BRZ. I own a 2014 BRZ. I understand that the issues with the vehicle, the fact that torque is like somewhere around 5 or 6,000 RPM, you know, the stereo system is trash. And I have been watching every single video, reading every review, and everyone is absolutely in love with these vehicles. And I'm just like, should I sell mine and then wait a year and then buy it? What should I do?
Okay. It was so much. So here, I was on the second wave, I think, of this program. And when I talked to people who at dinner who had driven it the day before, a couple folks said to me, they will have the new ones with an automatic or with the manual on the track that you can drive, but they also have the old one. Don't, as much as your heart is going to want you to go right for the new one, drive the old one first. Mm-hmm. Drive it around the track. And we had, I think we did like 2 or 3 laps the first time we went out. So you're like, okay, fine, whatever. You go out there, you do a couple laps, and you think to yourself, okay, this is fun in the old one. And that was the first one I got. And I'm like, this is fun. I love this.
Fun car.
This is really cool. This is really fun. I don't understand why were people complaining. Like, you're kind of like, there's not a lot. I mean, there's things to complain about, but it's not this awful car, right? Then you get out of that, you adjust your helmet, you get back into the new one. And I swear, I hadn't even gotten to where I can open it up, where I'm sort of like in the, you don't have to throttle back, you know, you can just open it up, hammer down. I hadn't even gotten that far. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is not the same car. Like the difference, you can feel it, the acceleration, the handling, how planted it is, how much faster I could go. Like I could feel myself pushing it harder immediately, but feeling that the car was more controlled. It was a joy. I drove that a lot. I drove it in circles around and around and around and around and around. And at the end of the day, I had that sweaty helmet head and I had to go directly to dinner with Jeep. And I was like, hey, good to see I was on a track today. Sorry I look like this. It was really fun. I feel like they made so many improvements. And, you know, when automakers say they make a lot of improvements to a car, sometimes you feel them. Sometimes you think, I have no idea what you're talking about. You say you improve this, you say you improve that. Maybe on paper or to this super, you know, well-attuned engineer or sports car driver, they're going to look and say, yes, I can notice that there is a modicum of difference in this vehicle. You don't have to be that person. This is markedly better in every way, and it is an absolute hoot to drive it. I loved it. I loved it.
I'm so excited about this car so much because I love my BRZ, and I like the fact that they took a fun car and then they like, oh, there's some issues with this fun car, and we fixed those issues, but we didn't screw up the car.
Correct.
That's the, because sometimes they fix the issues.
We didn't break it.
And they're like, oh, well, but we got rid of a manual transmission, or, you know, we got rid of this sort of suspension to save some, you know, we had to save some money because we added a bigger engine, or yeah, the torque band is, it's still the same because we still have the same engine, but we did this other thing. It's,
Yeah, because sometimes they make it, you know, they make it better and you're like, well, technically you fixed those problems, but now it's no fun to drive and I'm not enjoying it. Like you fit this one, it is that sort of like car that you get into and you on the track, you have that moment where you literally think to yourself, oh, yeehaw, this is fun. Like you want to cheer out loud. It is such a joy to drive this. It looks good. I mean, the styling changes, even that, it's still the same, but it's not. Like it updates it in a way that you don't lose the character of the old car. You just get the next iteration with improvements.
Well, it's got kind of a chunkier look to it.
It does. It's sort of like this lower, wider.
The old one was
wider,
a little more svelte.
Yeah, it's kind of like hunched, like it's down on its haunches, but it looks fantastic. Yeah. The only thing that we don't know, unless it's come out, and I haven't seen it, I don't think it's going to come out for quite a while, is pricing. They said that it will start, I believe the word he said was comfortably under $30,000.
So 26, 27, I think that's what that means.
And when people push like, okay, which, you know, there's two trims. Are they both going to be under 30,000? And literally he gave exactly the same answer. It will start comfortably under 30,000. So I have no idea how pricing is going to be. Hopefully it's not crazy. I mean, it'd be nice to think you could get the higher trim without breaking the bank.
Yeah,
But they don't. They say they don't release pricing till closer towards production because they're still negotiating things. Blah 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 blah. So we have no pricing.
So what's on the higher trim?
And when is production?
Just offhand.
The higher trim, it adds. Let's see what kind of things it adds. It adds. Instead of 17-inch wheels, it's got 18s. It has this funky little duckbill rear spoiler. There's adaptive front lighting. I think you get a better audio, slightly better audio system. Mm. And you get some unique interior accents. There's like all these black and silver accent trims. Is that really it? I'm trying to think if that's it.
Yeah, I don't care about any of that.
It was mostly appearance stuff, and mostly appearance, better wheels, and the spoiler. I mean, you can tell the difference. The little duckbill spoiler on the back, the little Donald Duck thing going on there. It does look cute, but I don't. Not knowing if it's like, okay, am I paying an extra $2,000 for that stuff, or am I paying an extra
$500?
What is it? Without knowing 4, how much 000, they're,
who knows?
Right, without knowing how much they're charging you for that, it's hard to say, like, would I do that? I might do it if it was reasonable, but if it suddenly made it exorbitantly expensive or crossed some number in my head that I felt was like, no, then I might not, because there's not these significant changes.
I'm more interested in go as opposed to show when it comes to this vehicle. So
then you're going to want the one that starts comfortably under $30,000.
I'll start, yeah.
And that's probably the one with the manual transmission.
Oh yeah, definitely yeah. You can't. I guess you can get it with it. You can get it with an automatic, but I don't see why you.
You could drive both, and I drove both. On a track, I kind of, because I'm not an everyday track driver, and it's harder. It's harder if you're not used to driving a manual on a track to make your shifts the right way. So I had fun driving the automatic, but you get. I mean, the control you get with a manual, come on. Like, if you really want a sporty little car, you want a manual transmission. Yeah. I would absolutely get it with a manual. Yeah.
No judgment for those who get an automatic transmission. It's totally fine. I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy who's going to, like, make fun of you for driving an automatic. For me, though, I am.
I think it's I hate it when people bash on people because they don't want to drive the automatic. You know what? If that's what you want, it's your car. Drive what makes you happy. As long as you enjoy it, you know, maybe somebody else loves the manual and that's fine. I just, you know, the fact that there's even like, yay, they're offering one, you know, because it's fewer and fewer cars. The fact that they offer it, and I know it's exactly the kind of car that you would think they would offer it with, but they didn't have to.
The 2 Series just lost its manual transmission. So, and that's the exact kind of car that you would think would have it.
Right. So the fact that they still put that on there, I give them a gold star. And that way people, and I do think because fewer and fewer people know how to drive one, it does make sense. I mean, you have to have an automatic because, you know, there's far too many people that either prefer it because they just don't like the manual transmission or simply don't even know how to drive a manual. So it's like, well, they might love your car, but they're never going to drive it because they're not going to learn to drive a stick now, you know?
Yeah.
My older daughter actually just bought a 2017 86 earlier this spring, and she got one with an automatic. She knows how to drive a manual.
Yeah.
She used to work for Drive Shop delivering cars, and you know, so she spent quite a bit of time behind the wheel of 86s with the manual transmission.
Yeah.
And you know, she decided that, you know, because this is her daily driver car, she decided she wanted one with an automatic, and she loves it. You know, so you know, not going to complain.
Because it's the best. It really is one of my favorite cars ever. And it's not just because I own the car, but I will drive like all these fancy, expensive, you know, supercars, whatever. And then I'll get into that BRZ and it, you know, it doesn't have the power. It doesn't have the power of any of those vehicles. You know, but just the sitting position is just so wonderful in that car. When I was reviewing the Huracan, I almost mentioned how it was like sitting in my BRZ, and I'm like, you know what? People are just going to yell at me.
They're going to think you're insane.
They're going to think I'm insane because the sitting position, it was just like, oh yeah, this is how you should sit when you're driving a sports car.
You know, there's this funny sort of misconception that just because a fancy sports car like a Lamborghini or Ferrari or whatever is a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, that it is therefore going to be better in every way, shape, and form than something that's not. And there are plenty of sports cars and alternatives to some of these really expensive, like, oh my God, wish I could drive it cars that are really, really good. Like, yeah, sure, if you can drive a Lamborghini, if you can afford one, have at it. But it's not like your life is over if you can't, because there's really good cars that do many of the same things and in some ways are more drivable.
Yeah, And you can buy it. Yeah. You can actually afford it.
And you can afford that without having to to have your house foreclosed on. You know.
You don't have to be a billionaire to, a Silicon Valley billionaire to afford one.
Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of affordable sports cars, yes. I actually have one in the driveway right now as well. I mean, some people would maybe quibble with the sports car name, but I think in every way that counts, you know, this thing is a sports car, and that's the Hyundai Veloster N. And as you were saying, Robbie, you know, about manuals versus automatics, I actually drove the Veloster N for the first time a couple of years ago when it first came out with the 6-speed manual and really enjoyed it. I actually drove it, took it on a road trip to Pittsburgh, and it was great. But this one, for 2021, they updated it. They added a new 8-speed wet dual-clutch DCT, a dual-clutch transmission option. And it's this is actually probably one of the best automatics I've ever driven.
Wow.
Especially when you put it in N mode. So on the steering wheel of the Veloster N, there's a couple of buttons, you know. One is for the drive mode on the left-hand side, and the other one is for engages N mode, which basically, you know, dials back the stability control, changes the throttle mapping and the shift patterns, and also makes the exhaust louder. So it's actually got that fun sounding, you know, burp, because it's a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder, 275 horsepower. So, you know, it's got that, you know, kind of blat sound, you know, when you back off the throttle. And it sounds a lot of fun, and it's so much fun to drive in N mode. This thing, this 8-speed dual clutch feels like it feels exactly the way that if you were driving a manual transmission, you know, and you're a good driver, knew what you're doing, it behaves exactly the way you would want to do it yourself, except it's doing it automatically. You know, as when you lift off and you're coasting down, or you get on the brakes, you know, as you're coming into a corner, it's downshifting, you know, it's blipping the throttle as it downshifts. You know, it's doing all the things that you would do, you know, if you're heel and toeing, picking just the right gear as you go through the corner. It is so much fun to drive. And then, you know, if you want to take over, you know, manual control, it's got aluminum paddles, shift paddles on the back of the steering wheel, so you can shift up or down, and it's very responsive. You know, as a DCT always is, you know, they're very quick to shift, probably quicker than most humans can shift a manual transmission. It's got plenty of power with 275, and it's got an overboost mode, you know, so it can do short bursts up to like 286 horsepower. The seats in the Veloster N don't have a lot of adjustability. It's basically fore aft, seat back recline, and height adjustment, and that's it. But it fits me perfectly. You know, it's got heavier bolsters, you know, bigger bolsters on there, so it keeps you in place when you're driving, you know, when you're going through corners. It's the whole car is very responsive. It feels relatively light. There's only one real dynamic flaw that I encountered with this car. In a straight line, when you stand on the accelerator, it's fine. It goes straight ahead, no torque steer at all. But if you get on the gas a little bit too hard as you hit an apex and you're coming out, you will feel some tug in the steering wheel if the wheels are turned. If they're straight ahead, they're fine. But if their wheels are turned, you will feel some tugging in the wheels as you accelerate hard out of a corner. And that's one thing, you know, some of the better front wheel drive, you know, high performance cars like the Honda Civic Type R don't do that. So, you know, this one, the front suspension is clearly not quite as sophisticated in setup. I don't think it's using a dual axis steering setup, steering geometry the way the Type R does. But aside from that, you know, once you figure out what it's going to do, you know, then you learn to modulate a little bit, you know, get a little bit further out of the corner past the apex before you get on the gas, and it's fine. And even when it does give you a tug, you know, it's not like throwing you off into the ditch or anything like that. It's still very easily controllable. You know, unlike most sports coupes, you know, we'll call it that. You know, this car has a unique format. If you've never seen the Veloster, you know, it's sort of a cam-back design, you know, almost like a little mini shooting brake kind of car. And it's a three-door. And, you know, compared to the GR86, which nominally has a back seat, but
I mean, it has
otherwise
the back seat.
Completely useless.
Technically speaking, it has a back seat.
It has a back seat. It has two seat belts back there, but I don't think you can actually put human beings back there. You might be able to put a dog the size of my corgi in there, but that's about it.
I think your dog would probably not be happy with you.
I've put the big dog back there. I put Bowie, the big German Shepherd, back there, but then Nico, the little German Shepherd mix, she's just tiny. She sat in the front seat because she's like, oh, there's no room back here for me. And she, Bowie was not happy back there because it has that little, because you know, you have the drive shaft, you have the tunnel there, and he's just like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the, you know, obviously the Veloster, unlike the GR86, is front wheel drive. It's a three door. It actually has an extra door on the passenger side of the car. Why they didn't just add one on the driver's side as well, I've never really quite figured out, especially because they actually do have a left side body stamping that has a door on that side for right hand drive markets. But, you know, and at any rate, the three door, you know, that extra door on the passenger side makes it easy enough to get back there. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, for myself, I'm 5'11", you know, it's not hugely roomy, but I can sit back there. I wouldn't want to take a long road trip sitting back there, but it's adequate, you know, for going across town, going out to dinner or whatever, you know, take a couple of friends along with you. It's fine. You know, you're not going to be squeezed in there. I mean, you might be, Robbie, because you're several inches taller than I am, or, you know, Nicole's your husband.
Yes.
But, you know, for up to about 6 feet tall, you can fit back there without too much difficulty. Daisy had no issue at all back there. I put in I have a seat cover that I always throw in there when I take her in a car, and, you know, put that on there. And we took it to go to the lake yesterday, and I put my inflatable paddleboard and towels and other stuff in the back. There's, you know, decent sized cargo area in the back of this thing under the hatch. So, you know, it's a fairly practical car, but it's a hoot to drive. Like I said, and just, you know, as soon as you get in, you know, as soon as you start the car, just put it in N mode every time, and you will really enjoy yourself in this car, even with an automatic transmission. I think if I was buying this as a daily driver, even though I have never in my entire life, you know, I'm 55 years old, I have never owned a car as my personal primary vehicle with an automatic transmission. It's always been manuals. I might be inclined to go with this DCT because it's so good.
Oh,
wow.
That's praise right there.
That sure is.
You know, I mean, I like manuals. You know, the six-speed, you know, and this one is fine. It's not the slickest shifting six-speed, but it's fine. But, you know, the way this one behaves, the way this eight-speed behaves is really good. And I highly recommend it. This one came with no options aside from the 8-speed, so it's just standard Veloster N. Sticker price is $34,755, including $1,005 delivery charge. Why they didn't just make it $1,000, I don't know, but you, or $99.95, but it's $1,005. It's racing red with a black on black interior. One of the interesting little details, it's got the little light up N logo in the front seat backs, right around your behind, right behind your neck. So when you unlock the car, you know, if it's darker out, you'll see that little N logo light up in the seat. And then, of course, you know, it's got, you know, some of the trim in the signature color for Hyundai's N sub-brand, which is this pale blue color. So the seat belts and various other little bits of trim around the interior, like the buttons on the steering wheel, are in this same shade of pale blue.
Hey, enough.
Which doesn't really strike enough. You as the color for a performance brand, but hey, it works. You know, whatever. I'm good with it. I'm not picky. At least not about that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed this thing. It comes standard with an 8-inch touchscreen, and you know, as a modern car from the Hyundai Motor Group, it does include the Sounds of Nature in there, which my wife found very, very, very amusing yesterday on the way out to the lake, especially when I hit, you know, crunching through the snow, you know, walking through the snow. She thought
cafe. Cafe's the one.
I like the cafe mode, so it feels like I have a group of people drinking coffee with me. She liked the cafe. Yeah.
Yeah. She, you know, she thought that, you know, if you're commuting home from work, you know, something like the cafe mode would be very relaxing. You know, I don't know that I would necessarily have felt that way when I still had a commute, but hey, whatever. You know, you don't have to use it. If you like it, good for you. So Hyundai Veloster N. Awesome little sports car, you know, it's a interesting alternative to VW GTI or the GR86 or there's not very many choices
something
left
else
in this kind of segment anymore.
Mazda 3.
Yeah. I mean, there's fewer and fewer choices of vehicles like this anymore in the U.S. market, or really in any market. So if you're looking for something that's a lot of fun to drive, you know, definitely go take a look at the Veloster N. All right, Roberto, what did you have this week?
So I didn't actually get to drive it, but I got to go to and stare at it and sit in it while they put a towel down, so I wouldn't mess it up. But the Lyriq, the new the Cadillac, I believe it's 2023. Hold on, let me pull up my notes.
The
2023 Lyriq. I went and saw that in LA this past week, and it looks nice. It's a nice looking Cadillac. It's their first electric. It's going to be based on the Ultium platform, 100 kilowatt hour capacity battery pack. They're targeting over 300 miles of range, which is, if you're getting a luxury car, you sort of want that extra range, because you're paying for luxury prices. You want a luxury car. You want to feel pampered. And when pampered also means like not pulling over as much for charging. It will charge at 190 kilowatts at a supported DC fast charger, which is nice. Cadillac says you can add about 76 miles in about 10 minutes. So if you're, you know, throw in double that and you get about 150 miles in 20 minutes. Initially, it's going to be rear-wheel drive only. That's the only, but then they're going to have a four-wheel drive version or all-wheel drive version coming out later on. The first one will be 340 horsepower, 325 pound-feet of torque. So, you know, that should be more than enough for the average person. And it has, Mercedes has their hyper screen, their gigantic screen that just fills up everything. And it's really a piece of glass. It's the gigantic piece of glass, and then there's three different displays. Cadillac has their large 33-inch curved display, which is actually one display with three different segments in it. The segment on the left has touch controls. Then you have the dash cluster, and then the right you have the infotainment screen. They all sort of can power on and off on their own, but they're all the same display. They're very excited about that. I don't think the average person cares if it's one display or three displays. I think what they're really going to like is the fact that it starts at $60,000, which for a luxury electric SUV from Cadillac is a pretty, that's a good price. Is a good price. And I told them, like, you guys are sort of undercutting everyone else. And they're like, well, they don't want to talk about how they're trying to undercut everybody else. But $60,000. If you're a fan of Cadillacs, you want an EV, you want an SUV, which is pretty much everyone. It's kind of almost a no-brainer. Now, I didn't get to drive it. I only got to stare at it and sit in it. So I don't know how it drives. Maybe it drives great. Maybe it drives horrible. I don't know. So we'll have to wait until that happens. Probably at the beginning of next year, maybe the end of this year.
But you thought it looked pretty and it was comfy under your butt, even with the towel there.
Yes. Yes. It was comfy under the butt, even with the towel there. I think they did a good job sort of bringing all the Cadillac, fanciness to an EV at a price point that is very compelling, for people who are looking for a luxury brand, vehicle that is also an EV. It'll be interesting to see how well it sells.
For comparison, the BMW iX, which has a similar 300-mile range, and 200-kilowatt charging, it's a similar size to the Lyriq, starts in the mid $80,000 range.
Wow. So you're talking a big difference.
$20,000 price difference. $25,000 price difference.
You could buy a Lyriq and a Mini SE.
You could make the case that the Lyriq is somewhat more attractive than the BMW.
Yes, you can.
Some people might disagree.
Lyriq.
And, at least it doesn't have that crazy grill. The Lyriq does have that cool lighting pattern. When you walk up to it, the way it wakes up, the lights in the fascia, I think is kind of neat looking. I saw the Lyriq last year when they did the show car, which basically was almost identical to the production vehicle, last year at GM's EV Day at the Tech Center. Mm-hmm. Here in Detroit, that interior was really impressive then as well. Obviously, didn't get to drive that one either. But what did you think of the design in person? Having seen the photos.
I actually like the design in person. It's tough when you have that super sloping rear end, where sometimes it looks good and sometimes it just looks kind of awkward. I think they've erred on the side of good. It doesn't look great. It's not perfect. But it's not awkward. I think the addition of the vertical lights back there sort of make it look nicer. I think I talked about in the video I did for Engadget, where it sort of harkens back to the Cadillac fins. They have these nice vertical red lights in the back, and in the front. This is the first time they've been able to have vertical headlights. So the headlights are vertical. They've done a lot of like cool sort of designy stuff. They have the crystal or diamond, I forget what they call it, but the front end looks nicer than the BMW, but it look yeah. So the front end looks nicer.
It's a low bar, but
yeah, and it is. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the nicest way to say the front end of the BMW is still very polarizing, and most people are still like, really? You're just going to make that thing bigger and bigger, aren't you? And BMW is just sticking by their guns with that. They're like, yeah, this is what we're doing. You can also get Super Cruise on the Lyriq, which is Cadillac's hands-free or GM's hands-free driver assistance system, which is possibly the best system on the market right now. So you can put your hands in your lap and stare at the world, which is nice.
they also have a new infotainment system based on Android Automotive.
That's got
Google Maps and Google Assistant built in there.
Yeah, all that sort of popped up, but I wasn't allowed to use it. It wasn't quite ready yet. So I can't tell you how great it works or how bad it works. Again, like driving, I wasn't allowed to push buttons. I could point at things, but I can't tell you if it has any latency. I can't tell you, you know, if Google Maps is like the integration's as good as what we've seen on the Polestar, or in the XC40. But I think it looks like they have a winner. I mean, if it drives well, it doesn't even have to drive great. If it drives well, if it drives really good, if the infotainment system isn't a laggy mess, I think people are going to think Cadillac is going to have trouble keeping this thing in showrooms for, because I think more and more people are realizing just how much better an EV powertrain is for a luxury vehicle, because it reduces that vibration, it reduces that sound, it reduces all these things that we just sort of, even in the best, you know, even in the best S class, you still have, you know, you can still, you know, they do a ton of stuff to get rid of the sound, but you can still sort of hear and you can still sort of feel the vibration. And then you get in the EQS and you're like, Oh, this is what this is about. And I think if Cadillac can do that with their $60,000 Lyric,
Price is incredible. That's a
price
really
is crazy.
Price.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive what they're doing. And if that's what they can do with the Lyric, you know, I can see GM overall like making some really great, potentially inexpensive cars on that Ultium platform.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting segment to watch. You know, in the next year and a half, 2 years, there's going to be a lot of competition in that premium electric crossover SUV segment. You know, you've got the Lyric, the BMW iX. I actually just had I went to a Ford thing the other day in conjunction with the Woodward Dream Cruise and had lunch with Darren Palmer, who's their GM general manager of electric vehicles. And he was talking about what's coming next after the F-150 Lightning, which they had previously alluded to, an electric Explorer. So there's going to be an electric three-row crossovers for Ford and for Lincoln, you know, in the same segment as the Explorer and the Lincoln Aviator. So there's going to be a Lincoln Aviator that's going up against this, and a whole, you know, the Rivian R1S, of course, and who knows what else is coming. I don't know when Mercedes is going to launch their electric version of the GLC. Is that coming next year, I think?
I think so. That sounds right. I'm going to say sure.
Yes.
I'm going to go sure.
Well, it'll be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course, you know, the Volvo XC90 replacement as well, which is also going to be electric. So there's going to be a lot of interesting competitors in this market. You know, I think they're going to be trying some different things with that, and we'll see how it plays out. So that wasn't the only EV that you had some contact with, however brief this week, right?
So I also had, I had them bring me, a Chevy Bolt, the brand new Bolt, because I had driven the old one like 60 times. I feel like by the time it had come out, like I'd driven like 15 pre-productions. I drove it like 3 times after it was out. So I was like, well, let's try the new one. I know it's essentially the same vehicle. And so I got it on Thursday. I was supposed to get it on Friday, and they're like, hey, can we bring it a day early? And I was like, yeah, sure, bring it on in. I'm not going anywhere. I got it on Thursday. I drove it to the supermarket to pick up some stuff. And then Friday I had to work. And then after I finished work, my plan was to go drive it around Friday night, get it charged up, and then do some, like, you know, do a video. I was sort of planning out like what I was going to do on video with this thing. And then Friday afternoon, around 2 p.m., 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m., I got an email from GM saying, hey, I don't know if you know this, but we just released recall information. The fleet manager is going to contact you and come get your car. So
we'd like our car back. Thanks.
We would like our car back. Don't put it in your garage. Don't, you know, all the things that GM had announced to the owners of the of the Chevy Bolt, they were telling me, and I said, okay, I won't do that. And so it just sat in my my driveway until they picked it up like a just a little bit later, and then that was the end of
so my... That's your review of your 30-second grocery store run in the Chevy Bolt.
Yeah, so I didn't get a, it wasn't, yeah, the exciting time that of my life that I was going to have with the Chevy Bolt, like, aww, testing out like different things. Which, you know, I understand why, even though we'll talk about this some more, but yeah, it was interesting. This is the first time I've ever had a car for about 24 hours, and I've been told, oh, we're picking that up because of a recall. So yeah, don't charge it over 90%. Don't put it in your garage. Don't, you know, all the things they were sort of telling everybody who owned a Chevy Bolt at the time when they decided we're just going to recall every Bolt ever made forever. And we'll see you all at the dealership.
Yeah. I actually was scheduled to have a Hyundai Kona EV last December. And the day before it was supposed to be delivered, Hyundai announced a stop sale and recall for the Kona EV for exactly the same reason. And so that one never even got to me. The day before it was supposed to arrive, I got a call from Drive Shop saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to be able to bring you the Kona, but we'll bring you this something else instead. And so the issue here, and this is actually, I think, like the third, maybe fourth recall on the Bolt over the last 6 or 8 months related to this battery issue, because they've been trying to find the root cause of it. And for those not familiar, basically there have been some fires with Bolts, with Chevy Bolts, when they're charging, and battery fires. And we've talked a little bit about battery fires before, but the fundamental problem when a battery decides it's going to have a thermal runaway event, it's really hard to extinguish. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does happen, it's really hard to put out those fires because, you know, most fires, you know, fire, to have a fire, you've got to have fuel, you got to have oxygen and an ignition source. And if you take away any of those three, you won't have fire. So, you know, most of the time with a fire, if you smother it, you know, because it's usually getting the oxygen from the atmosphere that we breathe. That's, if you cover it up and prevent it from getting oxygen, the fire goes out. You know, you have a grease fire on your stove, you stick a lid on the top of the pan, the fire is going to go out. You know, you pour water on it. Well, you don't want to pour water on a grease fire. Please don't ever do that.
Don't ever do that.
You know, if you have
that's a bad scene.
If you're having
bad analogy.
If you're having a bonfire outside, if you got a fire pit in the backyard, you know, pour water on it. You know, or campfire, pour water on it. It's going to go out because it starves the fire of oxygen. The problem with batteries is they have oxygen in the materials that make up the battery, like the electrolyte and the cathode coating. And when it heats up, it releases that oxygen. So even when you starve it of oxygen from the atmosphere and you smother it, it's still going to generate its own oxygen and keep burning for potentially for hours on end in the case of car batteries because they're so large. What usually causes a battery fire is a short circuit in the battery. This happens when the cathode and the anode, the positive and negative electrodes, negative and positive electrodes, come in physical contact. You don't ever want those two touching each other. If they do, you get a short circuit, you get lots of heat, and then bad things happen.
Fire.
In the case of what happened with the Bolt, and I suspect it was the root cause was the same thing in the Hyundais, because they were using cells, lithium-ion cells from LG Chem, from the same supplier as GM, produced most likely in the same plant because they're all sourced in Korea. And what they, for the first time in this release that came out on Friday at like 4:30 in the afternoon, on a Friday afternoon, you know, half an hour after the financial markets closed, you know, which is where companies traditionally try to bury their bad news.
Bury the bad and, stuff.
You know, yeah. 5 o'clock on Friday, I get a call from a reporter at the Detroit News wanting a comment on this. huh? I had already walked away from my computer and I was making dinner on the grill. And so I went back and read the release. This is the first time they've actually said anything specific about what was causing it. And it turns out that apparently they had a manufacturing issue where what's known as the separator was getting folded and the tabs were getting torn. And so basically a lithium ion cell, or actually any battery cell, consists of three layers. You got your cathode, your anode, and there's a plastic separator in between that's porous, and that allows the lithium ions to pass back and forth between the cathode and the anode without the two electrodes touching each other. Well, if that separator gets folded somewhere along the line when they're manufacturing it, you might leave a space where the cathode and anode can touch each other. Again, that's bad. If the tabs get torn, the tabs are the terminals that stick out of these pouch cells that they use to connect them all together. If that gets torn, you can have something, again, that's touching the wrong place or it's causing too much resistance. Heat, bad for batteries. So GM is recalling, originally when the first couple of recalls were only covered the 2017 to 2019 models, which had the smaller 60 kilowatt hour lithium pack. From the 2020 and 21 and 22 models have a slightly larger 65 kilowatt hour pack. Those weren't covered in the original recalls. The new ones cover all of them because they found that the problem is actually still happening. And so they're going to bring back all these cars, replace all of the battery modules. So everybody that's got one is basically going to get a brand new battery. Wow. So any degradation in performance you might have had from your battery, you're going to get a full reset. It's going to go right back to day one.
Yeah, that's pretty.
It's like bank error in your favor.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass because you can't park your car in your garage, or at least you're not supposed to, and you can't charge it above 90, which you probably aren't doing regularly anyway if you want to keep your battery from degrading quicker. But at the end of the day, if you have an old bolt, you're like, hey, I get to start over. It's like a reset button.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Unless you're the people who made the battery, and now you're buying new batteries.
Oh, yeah. Unless you're LG. Well, can.
Yeah. So this is going to cost LG about $1.8 billion for this recall.
It's a bad day for LG.
Yeah. Not a good day for them. But just to provide a little context for this, yes, it's bad when your battery catches fire, but so far there have been, I believe, seven instances of this across 120,000+ bolts, which, that works out to about, I calculated it earlier, about 0.006% of all bolts have had a battery fire. For comparison, I looked up some stats on car fires with non-electric cars, and in 2018, there were 212,000 vehicle fires in the United States, which out of a fleet of 290 million vehicles amounts to 0.07%, which is about 10 times the frequency of these bolt battery fires. So yes, it's not good when your battery catches fire. But on the other hand, gasoline cars catch fire at a much, much higher rate than electric vehicles. So, if you have a bolt, park it outside, but don't be overly concerned about dangers of electric vehicles. Fires are going to happen from time to time. It's life. But
I feel like it's a real issue, but it's not like, oh dear God, panic, your car is going to burst into flames tomorrow. Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah. It's not spontaneous.
Right. Well, it could, but probably not. Yeah.
It's kind of spontaneous, but it's not like any warning.
Yeah.
If your battery is about to catch fire, you will see some smoke and you probably smell something.
You're just going to wake up and see smoke, four little tires just sitting on the ground melted into a puddle where your car used to be. Like, what happened last night? Yeah.
If you're in the car, get out of the car if you smell smoke. please get away from it as far as you can and call 911 and you should be fine.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
I remember when Hyundai put their when they had their recall, they were like, we're not 100% sure why, but we're recalling them anyway. We've been working with LG Chem trying to figure out why these are, but we're not it was essentially like, we're not 100% sure why. And I think GM probably pushed a little bit harder, and now they're like, okay, here's the deal. LG Chem messed up. So we're recalling everything. If you have a Hyundai electric or a Kona electric, they're probably going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if they extend that recall as well. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they already did the recall on those and replaced all the batteries on the Konas. So even though they weren't sure what the root cause was, you know, they already did the battery replacement, so they should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
GM just took a little longer to do the replacement part of it.
I'm sure they're probably like, "What if we all do right. this?" No, sorry.
So, continuing on the theme of new electric cars, this past week was supposed to be the New York Auto Show, and
there
were actually the auto show was canceled thanks to Delta. Not the airline, but
yeah. Yeah, I like Delta Airlines. Let's be clear, Delta Airlines, yay! Delta variant, yes. Boo.
No, okay. Exactly.
I'm big fan of Delta Airlines, not the virus. So the show was canceled, and one of the vehicles that was supposed to be unveiled at the show was from Genesis, their first EV, the GV60. What did you two think of the GV60?
Say it.
I like it, and I think it looks like Pikachu.
Pika Pika.
Pika Pika. Pikachu.
It's the color. Like, we color were talking really, about this.
But it has, like, a little happy face. It has, the color doesn't help, but it has a happy face. Everything about the exterior, from what they've shown off, it had been blue. I'd probably be like, oh, okay. But it's this bright, like almost greenish yellow. It's a Pokemon. It's the Pokemon car.
I don't know why they picked this color. This color doesn't.
It doesn't exude like a luxury vehicle.
It says cute little affordable crossover that you buy right out of college. Not here's your luxury EV. It's from the color. Genesis. The color slays me. I mean, get the color, sure, have fun colors, but somehow looking at these images, it really does just. It looks like a Hyundai. It looks like it should just be a really cheap crossover. The color, the Pikachu color is not working for me.
Pika Pika.
Pika Pika.
Not on a Genesis.
Not on a Genesis. It's a great color. It's fine on a Hyundai. It's fine on a Kia. It's fine on a lot of other cars. It's not fine on your luxury EV. It makes it too cutesy.
It does make it cutesy. And then the interior looks nicer.
I am an advocate for more bold colors. On cars, we absolutely need, more in-your-face colors. But I agree with you. I'm not sure that this particular shade of slightly greenish yellow works for the Genesis brand for what they're trying to achieve.
And then you look inside
with a green tint to it.
Yeah. And then you look inside and you're like, this looks like a Genesis, has a nice, it's got a nice interior, it's got this blue, it's got all this stuff, but you can still see the yellowish on the outside through the little side displays for instead of side mirrors. This vehicle has, well, not for our, we won't
for
get
not,
it, but in other places, they'll have little displays. So you're like, oh, this is nice. But if someone showed you this and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then they showed you, oh, by the way, that's inside of this yellow thing. They're like,
does
what?
Does not work. It's like they don't work together. Like, you look at it, truly, you look at the interior, like, oh, that's very Genesis. That's beautiful. It looks very upscale. It looks very streamlined, very modern. It's like, I can get behind this. That looks really cool. What's on the outside? Like, it's just, and I want to, like, we need to mock this up just in, like, silver or something boring and plain just to see if it still has the same sort of cutesy not working appeal. I think it's the color. I think it's all the color in these press images they release. Like, Genesis, give me another color of this car, please, just so I can see if it's the color that's slaying me.
Yeah. It.
I want a nice, like a nice burgundy red or something
that
like that.
That would work.
I think that would work really well. But I do like the blue in the interior on this one.
Oh, yeah. The interior.
And
really nice.
I'm looking at one of the photos of the interior right now, and I just noticed it's got two buttons on there. On the Alfa Romeos, on the Giulia and the Stelvio, they have the start button that's in, like, just below the nine o'clock spoke, the left hand spoke on the steering wheel, and they've done the same thing with it on the right hand. On the left hand side is the drive mode button. On the right is a yellow boost button, which presumably
is that
gives
boost
you a
button.
Bit
is
of
that
extra
the
power.
Same color as the car? Is that where that color is coming
like
from?
It looks like it. Yeah. I think it's the same.
Ooh, that color's on the interior seat trim. Look at that. You can see like there's contrast. There's piping on the side of the seats. It's that same stitching. Wonky yellowy thing.
Yeah.
I don't like the yellow thing. No. Yeah. I dislike.
We'll see if that actually gets into production. The other thing I'm looking at here, I noticed, I'm trying to figure out what the deal is with the, you know, the shifter here. It looks like it's a ball, sort of, like a glass sphere. And then they've got the control knob for the infotainment, which, you know, we were complaining about the flush-mounted rotary controller on the GV80. And, you know, this one actually has a more traditional cylindrical one that sticks up like a BMW iDrive. So it's not flush. But I'm trying to figure out what the deal is.
What is the little silver, the little, like, ball? What is that other little controller? And your hand's going to hit that all the time if that's a touch-sensitive thing.
Well, looks like the transmission selector. But I'm trying to figure out, because, you know, you've got the reverse neutral drive and park indicators there.
Huh.
But I'm not quite sure how that's actually supposed to work. It's kind of weird looking.
It's a little odd. We're going to need to see this in person. It's a little hard to grok what's happening on that center console in these images.
Yeah, it's definitely unusual. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. I just looked at the image that looks like it's from the back, coming from the back seat. So the first image is from the looking through the driver's door. The other one is from the back seat. And now in that one, it looks like it's actually something completely different. It's got sort of finger notches in there. It's more of a rotary controller, but it looks like something totally different from the other.
Yeah, I think there's something about the angle of these pictures. It's just not showing off what we're actually, whatever that is, it's not really coming through. It's like a little crystal ball.
I think it is. No, you know what it is? These are Photoshop renderings.
Mm-hmm.
They're renderings. These aren't photos of the car. Somebody Photoshopped something in there, the one that looks like a crystal ball. And they Photoshopped in, I think the other one, the rotary one, like looks like when you're looking over the driver's shoulder.
Because the crystal ball thing really looks like
probably what
it
actually looks like.
The crystal ball looks like it's a controller on a spaceship. Like you're just like aliens, just like that doesn't even look real. Yeah, if it actually looks like that, I'm going to be amazed.
A theremin. It looks like a theremin. You know, you're going to move your fingers across this thing to shift.
Yes.
And it's going to detect as you move your hand across this crystal ball.
Exactly what you wanted to do. Yeah. No. Yeah, I think you might be right, because the first image you're looking at, where it's like sort of from the driver's side, not from the back seat, at looks like a crystal ball, half a crystal ball on the center console. Watch, that's what it is. The other one is the mistake, but.
All right, so I made it.
So this thing
red, and it looks less like a Pokemon.
Oh, share it! Okay. Can you share it?
Yeah. Okay, I made a red one. Now it looks like a Tesla.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Where did you put it? Hold on!
I gotta save it.
Come on!
I'm going as fast as I can.
We've been stressing about the center console, and you're like, I'm making it red.
While Robbie's doing this, this is built on the same EGMP electric vehicle platform as the new Hyundai Ioniq 5, the Kia EV6, and a whole bunch of other upcoming electric vehicles from the Hyundai Motor Group. So it's going to have 300 miles of electric range and all kinds of other good stuff, 350 kilowatt fast charging. You know what? I'm just looking at the release here. It actually says the most noticeable feature in GV60's interior design is the crystal sphere, a sphere-shaped shift by wire that intuitively informs drivers when the vehicle is ready to drive. So maybe the crystal
sphere
is the right one.
Okay.
And then the other image must have been a Photoshop rendering, or maybe it was a picture, a photo of a different prototype that they photographed.
Okay, and just for the record, Robbie's red version of this looks so much better. Look, he just put it in slack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Look at that.
Yeah, this
it looks beautiful.
This looks much more like a Genesis.
Yeah. The color is the wrong color for showcasing this. I don't know why they picked the... This color looks great, though. Nice color choice. Did you have to sell your soul for that, Robbie?
A little bit. I was like, let's make it soul crystal red.
That looks so much, but it looks like entirely different. That looks elegant and Genesis.
Sporty.
Yep, definitely. All right. Another car that was supposed to be appearing as part of the New York Auto Show actually was supposed to make its appearance a couple of nights before the auto show is the 2023 Nissan Z, the production version, which was not much of a surprise because aside from the absence of the Fair Lady badge on the rear deck lid, this looks exactly like the Z Proto that was revealed almost a year ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I like it. I think it's a great looking car.
I dig
it. It's fantastic. Yeah. It looks beautiful.
It's got all the cool stuff of the old Zs. It's got the stuff on the new Zs. It just continues on that design language, but makes sure that it doesn't look like an old car. It looks like a new, updated
version. Good.
It does, yeah. It does remind me of the 260Z that my dad owned that I had centered on a rock, but
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Good work.
It's what I do. You need a Z car high centered on a rock. Be sure to reach out to Roberto
Robbie.
Baldwin. I will take care of that for you.
No, it looks
yeah.
Really
so they showed two of them. One was in the same shade of yellow, which is actually strikingly similar to the yellow that. On the GV60.
But it works on this car.
It works on this car.
Yeah, it works on this one. I mean, and it's the same shade of yellow that was on the Z Proto. And I said, aside from the Z Proto had the Fair Lady badge, which is what they call the Z in Japan. Everything else about this looks exactly the same as the concept, which is good. They did provide some more details. It's got a 400 horsepower twin turbocharged 3-liter V6, which is basically the same engine they've had in the Q60, the Infiniti Q60 for a while now, for a couple of years, and also in the Q50 sedan.
I have to read these colors. Okay, the interior color, there's this one bright blue that's sort of the same blue that's on the outside, and you can get the interior in that blue, and it's absolutely fantastic. It's like this crazy bright blue, so it's blue and black accents, but the names, okay, Searan, S-E-I-R-A-N, blue, and there's a yellow, wait a minute, Ikazuki yellow? I just want to order that yellow because I want to say that's what color my car is.
Color's your car. Ikazuki.
I'm probably mangling that, but it looks like Ikazuki. I-K-A-Z-U-C-H-I.
Ikazuchi. Suki?
Ikazuchi. I'll say that too. Ikazuchi yellow. Ooh. What color is it? It's not yellow. It's Ikazuchi. That makes it sound very fancy. Yeah. I love that. But the blue, that blue interior is unbelievable.
Would you say?
Yeah, no, that is fantastic.
Isn't that cool?
You don't often see colors like that on the interior.
No, you get it on the outside, but the insides never are that pretty. That blue, whew, I like that.
Yeah. And it will be available with a manual transmission.
Woo-hoo! Boom.
Yep. And it will retain the rev matching system that debuted on the 370Z, about a decade ago, more than a decade ago. But you can turn that off.
Yeah, you can turn it off.
Yeah.
And learn. You can learn or not. You don't have to learn. Whatever.
No information on pricing yet.
So
it will be coming out next spring. It'll probably be, $45,000 to start, somewhere around there.
It'll be the Supra. That's the car it's going up against.
But I like this design better than the Supra. It's a much cleaner design.
Yeah, I think I like this design better than the Supra. And it's made by one company instead of two. So there's that. The Supra is made by two companies and then built by a third.
Yeah. All right. Last item for this week, before we get into some listener questions, I had a chance to go for a short drive in a Ford F-150 with an early version of their Blue Cruise system. Blue Cruise is Ford's hands-free, partially automated driving system, similar to Chevy Super Cruise or GM Super Cruise, and it largely functions in pretty much the same way. It combines your adaptive cruise control with the radar that keeps you safe gap from the vehicle ahead of you, and a lane centering system that keeps you in the lane. And once it's active, you can take your hands off, put them in your lap, do what you will, anything except cover your face, because the infrared camera needs to see your face and your eyes before it'll allow the system to function. Super Cruise came out almost 4 years ago, and wow. Blue Cruise, it will be coming out soon via an over-the-air update to owners of 2021 F-150s and Mustang Mach-Es that have the hardware installed. And this one actually does slightly, at launch, it'll do slightly less than the original version of Super Cruise did 4 years ago, and definitely less, have less functionality than what Super Cruise is doing today on vehicles like the Escalade and the Cadillac CT4, CT5, the upcoming Sierra and Silverado. So there's no automatic lane changing capability. It's just a single lane system. And one of the neat things I noticed when I first drove Super Cruise back in 2017 was it uses the maps, the high def maps of the highways, to know where curves are coming up in the road. And depending on what your speed is, it'll use the maps as a forward-looking long-range sensor, basically. And if there's a curve in the road that is, you're going too fast to get through that curve safely, it'll automatically slow the vehicle down from whatever set speed you have it at as it goes through the curve. And then as you exit the curve, it'll resume what your previous speed was. For some reason, even though Ford is using high def maps, just like GM, although they're from a different supplier, they're not doing that at launch, which I thought was kind of odd. The other thing that they don't have, they have the infrared driver monitor system like Super Cruise, but they decided not to do something like the light bar system that GM and some other manufacturers are using, where you have the light bar in the top part of the steering wheel rim that really, clearly lets you know what mode the system is in, whether it's ready for Blue Cruise activation or not. It's giving you the indicators in the digital instrument cluster, which I think is not always as obvious, what mode you're in or when the system can activate. Like Super Cruise, it only activates on divided highways. It's at launch, it'll be about 130,000 miles of divided highways across North America. That will eventually grow. They will add more of this functionality over time via over-the-air updates. But it's a good start, but GM is still ahead of where Ford is with this system. Neither of you have had a chance to try this yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
It makes me think of Blue's Clues, so they should really change the name, because I mean, Super Cruise is already out there. They could have called Blue anything else, but they had to call it Blue Cruise. They might have just called it Blue Pilot or something.
I didn't think of that until you said it. Now I'm going to be able to think of it as it's time for Blue's Cruise.
Blue's Cruise. Blue Cruise.
Well, for what it's worth, GM is suing Ford for copy or for trademark infringement because they say Blue Cruise is too close to Super Cruise. And Ford is fighting back, saying that Cruise is too generic, and they want to invalidate GM's trademarks for Super Cruise as well as for Cruise Automation, their division that's building their robo-taxis. So we'll see what happens there.
It'll be interesting when the GM Bronco comes out. What is it? It's the Bronco. The Bronco Porsche.
Do you remember back when the old Hummers came out and Jeep still Daimler Chrysler at the time, they sued GM because the Hummers had a 7-slot grille, which was the signature thing.
Did they really?
For Jeep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually settled that case.
Mahindra? They sued them for that as well, for their little Jeep clone.
Yeah, Mahindra actually, they changed the grill, so they didn't use the 7-slot grill. They had a different grill design, but the rest of the vehicle was a copy of the original military Jeeps. So.
Yeah, the Willys. Looks exactly like a Jeep. Cool.
Yeah, but Mahindra last year, I think, gave up on trying to import that vehicle to North America. So, all right. We've got a few listener questions. One came in last week after we recorded the show. It's from the Missing Smaller Cars Car Guy for All on Twitter. He says, have hybrid drivetrains now reached mass acceptance in the consumer mindset? With vehicles like the Wrangler 4xe, Maverick, Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid, Corolla. If so, assuming it took since 2001 to get there, will the EV take as long to reach mass acceptance?
I don't think so. And I think that's a lot of that has to do with regulatory issues. So you're kind of going to start at some point having to buy an EV, and that's like 15, 14 years away if you live in California, if you want a new car. It's sort of plug-ins and then, hybrids and then plug-in hybrids are going to allow people to accept EVs a little bit quicker than they did with the hybrids, I think. I think there was this whole like sort of, hybrids, ew, these are gross cars. They're not going to be that great. And then, and that was around the same time that the idea of an electric car was, it's just going to be a really, really crappy, slow vehicle. And I think Tesla sort of, destroyed that myth pun intended, quickly. And so you have Panameras out, you have ETGT, e-tron GTs, you have the Hummer EV coming out. I think mass acceptance is going to be much quicker than what it was with hybrids.
Yeah, I think people already, like when the hybrid and EV thing, they were both sort of new together and kind of almost lumped together in most consumers' head. They were electric things that didn't use just a gas engine. And then, everything has a hybrid. Oh, wait, there's so many EVs. And Tesla in particular, like you said, they did so much for making EVs just like, I see Teslas all the time. They're just another car, mm-hmm. Very, very quickly they went from being something unique and special to just, they're another car. And what's going to take time is just for people to say, okay, I'm going to buy one, I'm going to get a charger, I'm going to live the EV lifestyle. But I think in terms of people saying, yeah, sure, they're just fine, I could handle one, I think they're there. It's just a matter of when are they going to actually ditch their gas engine for an EV.
Yeah. I think it's
Yeah. I was just going to say, in terms of mainstream acceptance, I think it will happen a little faster. I think, it's important to keep in mind that, we're actually, 11 years into the EV era now or more. I mean, if you count the original Tesla Roadster, 13 years, that came out, the first customer deliveries were in 2008. And the Nissan Leaf
13 years
started
ago
delivering. Yeah. And the Leaf, started hitting customers in late 2010. So we're almost 11 years into the Leaf era. So, we're still, a few years, I think, from really mainstream adoption of EVs. Probably in the next 3, 4, 5 years, I would say probably consider it mainstream. So it'll be a little quicker than hybrids, but, not too far off a similar timeline.
Yeah. I think
it'll take time to park them in their driveways just because it'll take a little time for that switch to happen. But I think mentally people are much more accepting of them already. Like people have bought into the idea of them.
Yeah. And plus people have the average American is what, 2.1 or 2.2 cars. So I think the EV is going to be the second car initially. It's going to be the car. Oh, we're just going to drive us around town. We got an EV. We want to feel better about the environment. And they're going to drive that car. And then that's going to be the main car. And then their gas or their plug-in hybrid or their hybrid is going to be the car they use for like longer trips.
Right, but the backup.
But I think the car that they mostly drive will probably end up being the EV, just because once you drive it, you're like, this is so much fun. This is way funner than my gas vehicle.
Way funner.
Why am I way funner? This is way funner. than my cast vehicle. Why aren't I driving this all the time? And then they'll realize, like, oh, 90% of the time I don't go more than, you know, 20 miles a day or whatever. Way funner.
All right. From AJ, he says, not exactly a question, but it would be a nice resource if a website listed make, model, current supply in the retail channel, normal days of supply, will probably help a lot of folks to make informed decisions. So Nicole and I were talking about this one earlier. Automotive News actually does list days of supply for every model through their website. It does require a subscription, but that's based on national numbers. You know, companies like Cox Automotive also track this stuff because they do a lot of their business units deal with dealers. But pretty much every car dealer now, certainly new car dealers, on their websites, they actually have listings of their inventory, and you can go to the website for any local car dealer and see exactly what they have in stock, or these days more likely what they don't have in stock. and you can shop through there and filter, by color and by model and, transmission and engine. So you can see exactly what's available. And there's also sites like Auto Trader that you can search for new vehicles, or KBB. I think you can search for new vehicles, and see, search for a vehicle, and it'll show, give it a range, like within 50 miles, within 100 miles, 200 miles, and it'll show you the inventory that's available. So there are a number of places where you can find this kind of stuff. Not by day, they won't list it by days of supply.
Right, but the challenge would be too, even if they're saying, okay, there's X days of supply of the Jeep Wrangler. Okay, but you don't know where those Jeep Wranglers are going. They could all be going to the West Coast and you live in New Jersey. They could all be going to Florida and you live in California. To figure out where the days of supply just says what they've got. It doesn't necessarily say where those are allocated, or even if they're allocated in your area, which dealer they're allocated to. So it's if you go to the dealer's website near you, the ones that you want to, that you're thinking of, okay, this is the car I want. You can see what they have, but we just got a new car, and it was, when I talked to them about it, they were able to tell me what they had coming in for like the next month and a half. Like, they knew exactly what was coming. So they can tell you like, okay, we have this many and this is how they're configured and this is what's coming. So if you have a really specific need, a decent dealer should be able to say, you don't have a snowball's chance of getting that anywhere, or no, yeah, you can get it. We've got them coming. You just got to wait a little bit.
Yeah. Or you have to just order it and just wait long that takes, depending on the vehicle and chip supply and microchip semiconductor supplies.
How many chips do we have?
Oh, this car's got a lot of microchips, buddy.
And that's a problem we're probably going to have for a while yet, probably well into next year, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. All right. Last question from Sean David O'Connor. Says, I'm looking for advice for a car for my parents. My retired parents currently split their time between a house in South Florida and a condo in the Chicagoland area to be close to my sister, her husband, and kids. They bought a 2018 RAV4 a few years ago to replace my mom's 2008 Camry Hybrid when the battery became degraded. They have been driving that back and forth from Florida to Illinois, but would like to keep the RAV4 in Illinois and fly to Florida going forward. Sometime this winter, they would like to get another car for Florida in addition to my dad's 2010 Camry, which has about 80,000 miles. I think this would be a good opportunity for them to get an EV, since a lot of their trips will be short enough to not worry about range anxiety, and they'll have the Camry for longer trips if necessary. Of the current crop of EVs, like the Hyundai Ioniq and Nissan Leaf on the low end, the Kia Niro, VW ID.4, and Mustang Mach-E on the higher end, and the upcoming Ioniq 5, Kia EV6, both look interesting as well. Do you have some other suggestions or caveats to add to any of my suggestions?
Let's see, a Kia Niro.
I know, I'm trying to read through the whole thing again. I'm like, that is a lot of information to parse.
So above the Hyundai Ioniq, I would look at the Hyundai, the Kona Electric, the one that just got recalled last year.
Yeah.
But I really like the Kona Electric. They got new batteries in them. The Kona Electric's it's a great vehicle. As you get older, it's a lot tougher to get into a sedan. That's why, as there's a lot of reasons why more and more people buy SUVs, but one of them is it's the, you know, the ability to get in and out of the vehicle without having to sort of stoop down like you do with a sedan or a hatchback. You know, I think a small SUV or compact SUV or a crossover or whatever you want to call it might be a good choice. And I'm going to say the Hyundai Electric, the ID4, I really like the ID4, except for that the latency that's in the infotainment system. But I think they're hopefully fixing that with an over-the-air update. The Mach-E is great, but it's probably a little bit too much car. It's more of those vehicles. It's more like, hey, it's a Mustang. You know, they're trying.
Yeah,
you're getting.
I agree. I think the Mustangs. I like the Mustang. The Mach-E might be my favorite of those little three that are listed there for that. But I'm like, I don't think that's necessarily what your parents are looking for. They're retired. I don't know that. I mean, hey, maybe your dad's like all about that. In which case, like, have at it. But I think, I do think like an SUV though, it's a lot easier for people to get into. Like the Nissan Leaf is great. It's a good compact little car, but it's also very small. And again, retired folks, it's small, it's low, it's tight. That's not always easy to get in and out of. So in terms of accessibility, going with something that's an SUV crossover ish thing is going to be a little bit easier for older parents to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Robbie's suggestion of the Kona EV, in addition to the Niro, I think are both excellent choices. I think, and also the ID4, all of those, you know, they have that nice balance of a higher, what they call H point, the hip point. You know, so you're not dropping down into the seat. You can basically just slide in and get into the seat. But unlike more traditional SUVs, you also don't have to step up into them. So I think they're just at the right height for most people to really be comfortable. So I think any of those are really good choices. The Ioniq 5, depending on what the timing is, the Ioniq 5 is going to be out sometime later this fall. The EV6, they might start some deliveries before the end of the year, but most likely probably not till most of them probably won't be available till January, February. Of what's going to be available this winter, assuming anything is available because of that aforementioned chip shortage, those ones here that are listed here, plus the Kona, I think are all really excellent choices. And, you're not going to go wrong with any of those. One other one to consider is the Chevy Bolt EUV, which is the slightly longer version of the Bolt. It also has, kind of that slightly higher seating position than a traditional car, maybe not quite as much as the ID4 or the Mach-E or the Niro. But, it's another one to take a look at once they've got all the batteries replaced. And they start selling them again. If you want something, completely off the wall, there's always the Hummer.
always get the Hummer. You make mom and pop proud. Issue with the Bolt, both the EUV and just the regular Bolt, is that they only charge at 55 kilowatts. that's their because they're using an old architecture, and the ID4 is 125, and I think the Kona is 100. And then anything else new coming from Hyundai is like 350, some ridiculous, crazy high because they're using the 800 volt system. So if your parents are a little,
although they're probably going to be charging at home. It sounds like they're going to be charging at home.
Oh yeah,
they're probably not going to be using DC fast charging very much. And the other advantage, because this would be their Florida car. They're not going to be impacted by cold weather. The range problem, the range reduction in cold weather. So, really any of these are going to be great for anybody living in Florida.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
You can get crazy, crazy cheap lease deals on Bolts every once in a while. From Costco. If you're a Costco member,
I've heard that's the best. Like Costco occasionally offers the most amazeballs deals on things. So
yeah, you can get like
the first person I've heard that from.
You can get some crazy lease leases on the Bolt. I know Costco also, I saw the other day that they also work with like Audi. So I'm assuming maybe possibly, potentially, maybe the, because Audi's part of the Volkswagen group, maybe they'll have an ID4 thing. So if they're Costco memberships, keep an eye out for that.
And I think sometime this fall, Audi's also going to be launching the Q4 e-tron.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically this, you know, it's the same thing as the ID4, but with a fancier body, nicer interior, you know, more Audi-like interior. So if they want something a little more premium feeling, although I'm guessing, you know, based on the fact that they've got RAV4s and Camrys, they're probably not that necessarily that interested in a more premium vehicle.
In the luxury,
but,
yeah.
You know, if they did want to splurge, you know, the Q4 e-tron when it comes out might be another interesting choice.
Yeah, it's going to be fancy.
All right.
Wait, we have one more question that I'm going to answer.
Oh, wait, we got
okay.
Nicole's you missed question. A question. So my middle name is Nuisance is apparently following me on Twitter and noticed that I was sitting by a fire pit in my backyard drinking whiskey with Luxardo cherries in it because Luxardo cherries are amazing. And I just felt like sticking a fork in the jar would have been sort of gauche. So I made myself a whiskey. And he said, Nicole has most excellent taste in cherries, but what kind of whiskey did she drink? So I'm going to answer his question. I was in Western Massachusetts with a friend, and I went to a place called the Berkshire Mountain Distillers. And it is the Berkshire bourbon whiskey, but is the maple bourbon whiskey that is finished in bourbon-aged maple syrup casks. So that is what I was sipping at the fire pit in the picture that I shared on Twitter the other day.
That sounds fancy.
It's very fancy whiskey. I'm a whiskey girl. So this was my fancy, maple bourbon whiskey that I was sipping with my redonkulously overpriced Luxardo cherry in the bottom because they're really, really good.
Definitely not gauche.
No, if I take a sat there with a fork and eat them out of the jar, maybe.
All right. I think that's all we've got for this week. Any final thoughts?
No, that's it for me.
I got nothing.
All right. All right. We will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.